Now I'm the kind of girl who has too much to say.
What's going on, everybody? This is your girl, Lauren Anderson, and you are listening to I've Got a Song for That, a podcast where we dive into what it actually takes to work in the music business.
I try my best, but I can't stop myself.
Today, we have Colin Peterick on, and he is a Chicago-based producer, musician, songwriter. He comes from a long line of incredible musicians. In fact, his dad, Jim Peterick, co-wrote Eye of the Tiger, a little song I think most people have heard. So he is here to share his wealth of knowledge growing up in a musical family and then continuing that tradition. So let's get into it. Well, welcome, Colin Peterick.
Thank you. Thank you, Lauren.
Yeah, thanks for chatting with me. This is a podcast, so nobody can see you, but you're sitting in your car because that's the life of a musician, right?
Yeah, I've got two screaming kids inside. You know, they don't let me write songs. They don't let me play guitar. I've got to break away and hide in the basement and hide in the studio to get anything done around here.
Isn't it funny? And then in a couple of years, like, they're going to be hiding from you. Like, it's...
Yeah,
it's always one extreme or the other, you know. It can't just be like, okay, I'm gonna go in here and let's hang out later. But
absolutely.
How old are your kids?
5 and 3.
Oh yeah, so they like really don't understand. They're just like, no, you're my dad. Yeah. Give me attention.
You know, it's funny. My daughter has like perfect pitch, and her intervals are like amazing. And wow. We were actually harmonizing earlier, but so she's into music, and but she. She doesn't like it when I, you know, have all the attention in the room with the piano. She's like, no, I'm trying to watch, you know, Netflix or whatever. I'm like, listen, this is my job, okay?
This isn't
why
just
can't
for
you
fun.
Let me play? This why? Isn't just for fun.
What do you think paid for Netflix?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
That's so funny. Well, I'm excited to chat with you. I was just listening to your music and reading a little bit about you. It sounds like you have a really, really cool, exciting career. And you're from Chicago. Where in Chicago?
So right now I live in Western Springs,
okay.
Which is 20 minutes southwest of the Loop. And
yep.
It's a nice little quiet suburb about 10 minutes from where I grew up in Burr Ridge. I lived in the South Loop for 10 years while I was going, while I was in college and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're originally from Chicago too, right?
Yeah. I grew up in Oak Park. So I don't know where Burr Ridge is. I know where Berwyn is. I don't know if there's...
Yeah. It's all Western, well, Western suburbs.
Yeah. Well, very cool. That's very cool. So tell us a little bit about what kind of genre would you consider yourself? You kind of edge into a lot of different genres depending on the song, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, I just love all types of music. I 1960s, 1970s. I mean, every decade has so much great music, and I just decided, like, why limit myself to any one genre? I'm just gonna write kind of what I want to write and what inspires me and what I feel like.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that ties my music together is, you know, my voice and my lyrics. And if one song is a little bit more jazzy and one song is a little bit more rock oriented, yeah, then so be it. I think I know I'd like to find an audience with an eclectic taste.
Yeah.
And so I tend to write music with an eclectic taste. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I would definitely say I do that as well. And I've tried to kind of like hone it in, but I agree. I feel like if it's an artist, there's still going to be that theme of like, it's still that artist. You know what I mean? Like for good, like obviously neither of us, unfortunately, are anywhere close to the Beatles status, but I mean, just being at the Beatles, like they wrote all over the genres,
yeah,
you know, but like, it still has that like pinnacle Beatles sound, you know. I guess some of them are kind of a fun surprise that I'll hear a song every once in a while and I'll be like, this is a Beatles song. That's pretty cool. But I agree. I think that if we write what's true to us, like we'll find our people, you know. It might not be as obvious as quickly where we fit
right.
in, but like, I don't know, if you're being authentic, you're going to draw people to you. Is that kind of what you're going for? That's.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with this upcoming album. It's called Everything and Nothing. It's coming out on June 14th. It was really like a pandemic lockdown project. I took all of my best material, and I tied a ribbon around the stuff that was almost done, and I blew the dust off, spiderwebs off some older stuff, and finished that off, and then compiled it all together, sequenced it, and it came out really eclectic. And but for what I'm working on now, I have a band. Like, a lot of what I did on the first album was like, I played a lot of the instruments myself. I played drums and keyboards and guitars and all the vocals. But now, since we're doing all these gigs, I put a band together. So I'm kind of writing for the band now. So I think the second album is going to be a little bit more streamlined in like the rock, indie rock, alternative rock direction. Okay. But I'm not against, you know, I love, like, one of my favorite bands of all time, well, the Beatles, is, you know, is a great example of a band that just, they were so successful that they were like, we can do no wrong. Let's experiment in all these different ways. It's almost like they were trying to push the, they were absolutely trying to push the limits of what could be considered popular. And they kept succeeding, one success after another. And so they're one of my biggest inspirations. So I'm definitely going to keep things eclectic. Yeah. The Beatles. Well,
that's cool. Sure. It was such a random, like, I guess that makes sense then, that that's the band I thought. I didn't know that before I referenced the Beatles. That's pretty cool. But you're clearly doing something right if that's who I thought of, you know? but I agree. I think that, like, it's interesting as a musician, you know, obviously we are masters of our craft, right? And so anytime we're masters of our craft, we want to kind of like take it in new directions and get weird sometimes, because like the normal kind of what's on the radio, we get bored of, because not because it's bad. I mean, some of it is, but mainly just because this is our life, and we have, like, we consume what's on the, like, that level of musicianship more than the average person. So then we want to take it to the next level. But
yeah.
Then musicians a lot of the times run into the issue of it not being accessible by the non-musician. You know what I mean? Because it's too out there. And I think that you're right. The Beatles somehow found this happy spot where they could get weird and like push the boundaries, but it still was something that everybody loved. It's literally like what we're all trying to do. You know what I mean? Like, how can I keep things interesting and push the culture forward, but still have it be catchy and, you know, something that everybody wants to listen to, you know?
And timeless too.
Yes. I feel like timeless is getting harder and harder to achieve these days. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's because there's with the modern, you know, recording techniques, everybody with a laptop can record, you know, a song. And that's great. I think it's awesome that, you know, Billie Eilish can record an album in her bedroom and win a Grammy for it. Like, that's amazing. But for every Billie Eilish, there's a million people that you know, they would benefit more from a more traditional, you know, approach where they start playing coffee shops and work their way up into a recording studio. You know, not everyone is lucky enough to be born into being a great producer. So, so what ends up happening is there's a lot of music that it really just panders to like the lowest common denominator. And when you do that, you're basing off of the current trends, you know, what you hear on TikTok and what you see on, you know, whatever, American Idol or football commercials. And eventually everything becomes really homogenous.
Yeah.
And it takes a band, you know, like a Billie Eilish, for instance, to come and break the norm. And then that's the new norm. And then it'll take someone else to come and break that norm. So I think musicians and as artists, they have a big responsibility to keep pushing limits. It just takes that certain mindset to do that.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to ask you a question, and I want to first state that I really do love Billie Eilish's music. It's not even for my generation, and I think it's really super catchy. But do you think that her music is going to be timeless? Like, in 10, 20, 40 years, is it going to be a hit, you know, like the Rolling Stones or the Beatles? You know what I mean? Are people still going to be playing and singing her songs?
You know, I think
that's a legit question, too. I don't have an answer.
Yeah, her music has such a broad reach that there will definitely be people that are coming up right now in high school that will be it'll be blasting her music, you know, at their high school reunions and their weddings, like 20 years from now.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, a good song is a good song. So
yeah,
I don't know if Billie Eilish is the greatest songwriter in the world, but I'm sure there's something good there. And if her songs can be reimagined, you know, 10 years down the road by up and coming artists that want to cover her, they might do it in a completely different way. So the trends of today's production techniques might be updated as the songs continue to get covered by new upcoming artists. So in that way, absolutely, her music will, if you have that broad of a reach, it'll live on, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Cause I was, and I don't mean to get so off of your music. I just think it's interesting to have these conversations. I think it tells a lot about a musician, you know, even when you're talking about other people's music, you know what I mean? Did you watch the Grammys? I feel like they're so controversial for.
I saw clips.
I actually, for the first time in a while, sat down and watched them, and Avril Lavigne came on and presented an award. She didn't play, but you know, I had this moment where I was like, oh my God, is Billie Eilish, like, you know what I mean? Was Avril Lavigne what Billie Eilish is now? I guess Avril was like, wasn't exactly pushing the trends. She was just popular. But like, I also hadn't thought of Avril Lavigne in a while. You know what I mean?
I was just talking to my wife about how Avril Lavigne sold more of those pink and green mascara tubes than anybody else in the world.
I still use those. Is that Avril?
I know. She popularized. It's like a whole trend of the you know, the skater girl culture. Yes. I mean, she did have a big impact on, like, it was MTV generation.
Yeah. That's
so
true.
Everything is different now. You know, there was no social media back then and TikTok.
That's
true.
Yeah.
And Billie Eilish is certainly thriving in this environment.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was
props to Avril.
What? What'd you say?
I said props to Avril. She killed it.
I mean, and she looked like she hadn't aged since all those songs came out, which more power to her.
Exactly.
Anyway, regardless, back to you. Thank you for going on this rabbit hole with me. And actually, I guess you're kind of a good person to ask about all this stuff. Again, not to diverge from your music, but your dad has had a hell of a career too. Do you get sick of talking about it? Or is it?
No.
Okay. Because
usually,
yeah, go ahead.
No, usually I'm not the first one to bring it up because, you know, I don't want to focus on that, but it's all good if somebody else brings it up. You know, I'm totally happy. I love my dad. He's a huge inspiration for me.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully he was able to kind of show you the ropes. I mean, because he wrote Eye of the Tiger, or was he a co-writer on that?
Yeah, he co-wrote it, yeah.
That's, like, insane. I mean, speaking of timeless songs, I think that you'd have a little bit of insight into that world, for sure.
Yeah, I don't think there's a song more instantly recognizable than Eye of the Tiger when it comes to the radio.
No.
And, you know, if you go to the gym and that song comes on, you look around and everybody starts working out
literally
a little harder.
Everybody adds like another 10 pounds to whatever they were just lifting.
Exactly.
This is true. Well, how do you think having a father in the world, in the music world, influenced what you're doing now as a musician?
I think he inspired me just because he's always had such a deep passion for music and songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And just forget about music. I mean, just to have a role model that's passionate about anything is a huge inspiration because there's so many people that just clock in and clock out and come home and watch the news and go to bed. But if someone can have a prosperous and long lasting career based on what they love to do, like, sign me up for that. That's amazing. Like, you know, my dad is the hardest working guy I know, but in a way he's never had to work a day in his life. And I think that's something to strive for. Obviously he got, you know, in order to be successful in the business, you have to have the talent, you have to have the willpower, but you have to hit some lucky breaks along the way, obviously.
Yeah.
And he's been very fortunate, but at the end of the day, he has a huge amount of perseverance. Mm-hmm. He wrote his first hit song in 1966.
Wow.
First number two national song in 1970, and then cooled off for a number of years, and then formed Survivor in the late 70s, and found more success, you know, 10 years later. So it just goes to show you that, you know, don't give up. If this is something that you really love, just keep going, because as long as you keep going, you're going to see people drop off next to you, and you might look, it's like running a race, you know?
Yeah.
Keep heading towards the finish line. Eventually the stragglers are going to be left behind. And even if you're jogging, eventually you might find yourself at the front of the pack.
Yeah. Yes. No, I think that's such a good analogy. And that's also what I've heard is like, you want to be successful, just keep doing it. Like, and honestly, yeah. Like this is one of the reasons I started this podcast is because I think, at least for me, and I know a lot of other people, one of the things that keeps me going on those bad days is having those conversations with like-minded people about like the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know what I mean? And like mm-hmm. how everybody keeps going even on our worst days, you know? And yeah. Because I agree. I think that like, obviously luck and talent and hard work and all that aside, like the number one thing is just don't quit.
Don't quit.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think
that's
a cool analogy. So how do you think then being like growing up in Chicago, how did the Chicago music scene affect your music and kind of mold you as a musician?
Well, there's a lot of, let's see, growing up in high school, I was in a progressive rock band in high school. So I was kind of like an outsider. I never really wanted to do what other kids wanted to do. I was kind of like alone. You know, I never played team sports and yeah. I got into like all this weird music and I wanted to put together a progressive rock band. And we actually did pretty well in Chicago. We did, we released two albums and went on tour. And then when that band broke up, I kind of stayed out of the music scene for a while, but there's so many great, you know, rock clubs and rock venues in Chicago mm-hmm. that kind of kept me in line. Like I knew I wanted to get into indie rock, you know, Wilco, a great Chicago, you know, rock band. So they were a huge influence on me. And, but honestly, nowadays it's like with the internet and the ubiquity of streaming platforms, it's like, it almost doesn't matter what your local scene is doing, as long as you can get your music out to the corners, you know, the LA, the Nashville, the New York. Chicago's is a big hub as well. So I feel fortunate to be right in the middle. And just target those key areas, and that's kind of what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds like it. What was guitar your first instrument? What was like, what do you consider your main instrument? It seems like you do so much.
Piano is my first instrument.
Piano. Okay. And then, on this album, you said on this album that's about to come out, was this the album that you said you played most of the instruments or did you have, okay.
Yeah.
So, wow, it's impressive.
Yeah. So after college, I opened up a studio and I became a producer for other bands, mostly as a way to just fund my own personal projects. You know, like I would, you know, take the money that I would make from recording other bands and put it into recording my own stuff.
Yeah.
So while I was doing that, I kind of learned how to play drums. I would just like get on sessions just because someone singer-songwriter that I was recording needed drums in there. So I taught myself how to play drums.
Wow. You
know, taught myself how to play guitar, and I already knew the keyboard. So when it came time to record my own thing, I just kind of naturally played most of the stuff on the album.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And it's kind of a cool, I know I actually listened to some of your music and I really liked it, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Very cool.
I particularly like the single My Secrets. I feel like I've heard that somewhere too, which was pretty cool. Maybe on like the local radio here. I don't know. I think that just came out this year, right? It's one of the singles off of the upcoming album. Yeah. I don't know. It sounds either that, or you just wrote a song that has that kind of like quality. You know what I mean?
It does. Yeah. It has a very familiar quality to it. And I think that's a good thing. If you can remember the hook after the first time you listen to it, I think that's the sign of a cool song.
100%. If you can't get it out of your head, like even if somebody's annoyed about it, you're like, I did something right there, you know?
Yeah.
But that was a great song. I really dig that one.
Thank you.
So where did the title Everything and Nothing come from? Because that's the title of the album coming out this June.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a song on the album. And I kind of had like an epiphany one day. I was like, boy, what is this, like this pursuit of life?
Yeah.
And I saw it online in an article from a friend where he was talking about the immortality campaign. Like it's a cool concept.
I don't know what this campaign is.
So if you live your life as like a campaign for immortality, like you end up missing out on living your life. Like if you worry about how people are going to remember you after you're gone, you can't actually enjoy like your time here on earth. So it kind of puts into perspective, like life and the world is at the same time, it means everything and it means nothing at the same time.
Yeah. Wow. So
it kind of just like blew my brain when I thought of that. And I wrote this long song. It's a 3-part medley. And it was kind of the impetus for the album. I was like, I'm going to name the album this. I'm going to finish the album. I'm going to put it out. I'm going to start, you know, getting a band together. And it kind of motivated me to get back out there.
Oh, really? Okay. So Everything and Nothing, like, when did you write that in the process? Like, was like that one of the first songs? Or you said you dusted off a couple of old ones too. So, but was that kind of what tied the whole concept together of the album?
Exactly. So I've been writing like all my life, but right at the beginning of the lockdowns, I was like, you know, I've got all these, this great material and I really have nothing to show for it. Cause I've been in several bands, but I've never released like a solo album.
Yeah.
So I had like 5 or 6 songs that I was really excited about and that were really coming together. I'm like, this is not an album. This is an EP.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really have a cohesive structure. So I don't know what to do. So, you know, we do what songwriters do. We take a break, we step back.
Yeah.
You know, one of the biggest tricks for any other aspiring songwriters out there is just be patient. You can't force inspiration.
Yes.
You have to just let it come to you. And one of the hardest things is just being patient and not getting frustrated. Like writer's block is a real thing. You know, I've had writer's block for a year at a time. And
that's funny that you say that. Sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, no, and then it comes in waves, and then you get a rush of songs and you write 10 songs in a week. And that's just the way that it happens. That's sometimes. True.
That's true. Okay. So I'm going to counter that actually. So actually on the episode that just recently came out of the podcast, I was having this conversation with that artist, and we were talking about how we don't believe in writer's block. But I think we're saying the same thing though, actually. Okay. So I think that what it is that I will sit down and I will write a song and it's going to be shit. And you know what I mean? And like, nobody needs to hear that song, but I wrote it. And I was equating it to like, in order for me anyway, to get to that spur of 10 songs that are great, I have to get all the like piles of shit out. You know what I mean? Like, I guess that's how I think of it, but I think it's kind of the same thing that you're saying. We're like, even though I'm writing that maybe that's what you equate to writer's block. I'm writing, but it's not anything good. It's not anything worth sharing. You know what I mean?
Sometimes you have to write can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to write 10 bad songs for every one good song.
Yes.
And other times, you know, my life is a little different than yours. I've got kids running around and stuff. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I don't have a chance to sit down at a piano for a week or 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's true.
So when I got this inspiration for this song, Everything and Nothing, it all kind of just flooded in and it came together and it turned into a 3-song medley. And I was like, okay, now I have an album.
Okay.
And then I wrote a couple more songs after that, and it's 12. Now I've got a 12-song full length, and it all kind of came together because of that.
Well, okay. So then, I guess that would kind of go towards like, I think I think that it's the same concept of like whether or not writers, this is kind of an interesting debate, is writer's block real or not? I think that it depends on how you define it. Because I would agree. So in October I wrote, hang on. Can you hear?
My yes.
in October I wrote a ton of songs. Like I did kind of, every once in a while I do a songwriting challenge for myself and I'll just pick 3 weeks or something and I'll write a song every day. And again, like I said, most of them aren't any good. And then I kind of get into this whirlwind of like putting out stuff that's good. And then I wrote all those songs and I was excited about it. I was like, okay, I'm going to put out an album, but I don't know. I kind of call it writer's block, but I kind of just went through this period of like not knowing what to do with them, not knowing which direction, you know, not having that like title track that kind of, you know, like charges the rest of it forward. You know what I mean? And I had to kind of be patient and just sit with those songs and like wait till I don't know, wait till I was ready. You know what I mean? Or like the song spoke to me or whatever you want to call it, you know? And I guess again, like I didn't think of that as writer's block, but it kind of was in a sense, you know?
I think that's when you need someone to step in, like a friend or a producer to listen and kind of just say like, center you, like put you in your lane. Like, I don't know if this is good. I don't know if this is the best thing ever or maybe half of these songs are good, but just like tell me, and then you get a fresh perspective.
Yeah.
So that can be helpful too.
That is a very good point. So that leads me to my next question, actually. Thank you. This is all self-produced, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what did you do? Who listened to everything for you and with you?
Well, let's see. So I self-produced it. I played most of the instruments, and honestly, I just went on instinct. I've been doing this for long enough where I feel pretty confident in my abilities to, you know, be able to have a confident like voice and a style that kind of is cohesive. But I do have a manager now, so he was a good sounding board for, you know, which kind of direction to take it in. And I brought on a mix engineer, Craig Bauer, who's a Grammy winning mixer. He's brilliant.
Wow.
And he kind of took, you know, I send him all the stems and all this stuff, and he kind of sends me back the rough mix. And I'm like, hey, this, and this are gone. And I like it, you know? So in that way, he's almost acting as a producer, because he's another set of ears that is impartial, and he can deem what is absolutely necessary, what is absolutely not necessary, and serve the song to the best of the ability. So between my instincts and my manager's instincts and the mixer's instincts, I think it works out, you know. But I would love to work with an outside producer in the future for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm in a similar boat. The last couple of albums I've done have also been self-produced. But that being said, I mean, my dad has literally gotten sick of these songs before they're even put out, because he's listened to them so many times. And then, you know, and then I had sent them to my publicist even. Like, she even listened to them, even though that's not her. Like, she's just a cool person that has, you know, insight into the world. And then also, too, it's self-produced, but in the studio, my guys in my band and my engineer, it was the same thing where it was a conversation. It wasn't just me. It was everybody kind of putting in their input. And obviously it's still my art, my songs in the end, but like, I literally could not have done it without their thoughts. Because to be honest, like you said, as long as, you know, you or I have been doing this, I'm not the expert at all these instruments. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't spent my life learning how to play like slide guitar or whatever it is. And so I think that sometimes, I don't know, I just think that like sometimes, at least for me, it's always nice to bring somebody in who's spent all that time learning the craft, because they're going to hear stuff that I'm not hearing, you know? And I think that that's another important part of creating music, is kind of like, I guess, tell me what you think of this. I feel like it's a balance of being confident in what you're doing and how long you've been doing it and what you know, but also being humble enough to be like, let's get an outside perspective, or like defer to somebody else. I don't know. Do you ever struggle with those two sides of the coin?
Yeah, I think there's a saying that goes something like, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with a team.
Oh.
You know?
Oh, I love that. How have I not heard that?
Yeah, but it's absolutely true. If you can find a good team, like I have right now, I just put a band together. We've been,
you know,
they're all friends. We've been rehearsing now for about 6 months, and that's why I'm really excited for the next, I'm excited for this album.
Yeah.
But the next album is going to be even just a totally different animal.
Isn't it funny how like you're in the middle of one project and your mind's already like writing the songs for the next one?
you have to do it that way, because as you know, the production and release schedule is so, like, you know, you have to, a song that you finished a year ago, well, guess what? The music video is just done, and now it's like, it's being released on Spotify next month. And it's like, I've already, this song is old to me. That doesn't mean I should rob my fans the opportunity to hear it, but I need to keep myself excited and myself motivated.
Yes.
So that's why it's always important to just always be writing, always have something exciting. Because if you don't have something new that you're excited about, then you stop being excited about the next, the thing that's like slated to be released, because it's not new to you anymore.
Yeah. I think about that even for like, for bands like your dad, like how, I'm sure he gets sick of playing all those songs. Maybe he doesn't, maybe he's found a way to make them new, but you know, I mean, I don't know if he's even touring or have, I don't know the details, but like he's, you know, at any new show, there could be somebody that's never heard Eye of the Tiger live. And so, you know what I mean? But like for your dad, it's probably like, oh, this song again.
No, my dad still performs.
That's awesome.
He's performed his whole career and he never gets sick of playing his old songs.
Really?
But he always sneaks in a couple new ones and that keeps him motivated and keeps him excited.
Well, and I, you know, I've heard some bands do this. Most bands, I feel like live, they'll change one, you know, a couple things in how they play the song, because one, it keeps it interesting for them, but two, it's kind of something new, but familiar for the audience too. You know, it's kind of fun to switch things up a little bit. Very cool. Okay. So what else? Oh, so you are, well, I guess before I move into skateboarding, I wanted to ask you about that. Did you have anything else to share about this new album right now, since we're kind of still on the topic of this music that's coming out?
Well, I was just going to say what we're just talking about with like live versions of stuff.
Yeah.
The four piece band I'm in now, you know, my Colin Peterick live band, we're doing arrangements of these songs on the album that are like totally cool new live arrangements, because it was recorded in the studio with me playing everything one by one and going back over it. But now we've kind of brought them back on stage and built them from the ground up to be like, to work as a four-piece band. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, is really cool. Yeah. And then down the line too, you could even do like a live album, you know what I mean? With different alterations, you know, so people can be listening to like those versions of the song at home.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah. I would love to do. I feel like I'd be really nervous for a live album though. That'd be like the one day my voice decided to not work.
Well, we can do tricks in Pro Tools to fix the little mistakes here and there. Nobody's going to know.
That's true. Oh man. Okay. So you skateboard. I know nothing about skateboarding. Tell me.
Oh my God. It's fun. It's creative. It's the first creative thing. I mean, I guess I painted and stuff in kindergarten and stuff, but the first like artistic, you know, expression that I had was skateboarding, because there's so many different things you can do. And there's a million different ways to get hurt on a skateboard. Some people can jump down 20 stairs and ride away scot-free, and somebody else can just look at a skateboard and fall on their ass. So
that would be me.
Yeah. But I would say, you know, skateboarding was my first love. I thought maybe I'd be a professional skateboarder in high school. It's kind of like it was my dream, but then I discovered music and I realized that it was more of a realistic path and less dangerous, and
which
it
not
still felt artistic.
I think it's so funny that music is the more realistic career for you, because most people were like, music is unrealistic for me, you know what I mean? But compared to skateboarding, you know, and clearly it's working, obviously, you know, you've got a great music career now, so it was more realistic. That's really cool though. I've never thought of it as like as skateboarding as a creative outlet. But I love that you kind of point out a theme I found in most creative people is that you have that primary, you know, so music, that primary thing that's creative, but then it's like you almost have like, everybody mostly needs like a second or third thing that they can be creative with, but it's not like your career. It's just to be creative. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Something to blow off steam every once in a while.
Yes. Which you'd think that we'd be sick of that, because our career is doing creative things, but it's like, I don't know. We always have to have something secondary or third. I think that that's a cool theme, and I'd never thought of skateboarding as creative. So I think that that's.
So I'll give you a good example of how skateboarding is creative. So as a songwriter, you're constantly like the world, the environment is like, you look at the world differently, because you're like, you know, what can I see? What can I extract from everyday life that I can turn into a song that'll reach people at an emotional level?
Yes.
Well, a skateboarder looks at the world in a similar way. They see a set of stairs where normal people see a set of stairs, and they say, hey, I can jump down that. I can slide down the rail.
Okay.
Hey, look at that bench. I'm going to wax it up and grind on it where people usually sit on it.
Yeah.
So it's like looking at the world in unique and novel ways, kind of the way, and I brought that into the songwriting. And then another aspect is like skateboarders are hopping fences and climbing on rooftops and just being fearless. And I think in any creative field, you kind of have to be fearless if you want any chance at success, because nobody wants to listen to someone who is not fearless in their craft, because that's kind of, it's what we were talking about earlier about pushing the limits.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think that people can hear something creative, be it music or whatever. And it's like, you can tell when somebody's not being bold and fearless without knowing, like, it just, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel like there's as much love and like passion and care in that creation. But no, I think that that's really cool. And that's so true. Yeah. You look at stairs and you're like, how can I use those stairs other than just walking on them?
That's or good. Even like, I'm sure you do this, but I listen to as songwriters, we listen to music differently. Mm-hmm. We don't listen and dance. We listen and analyze. You know what I mean? How can I use this song in my songwriting? So it's kind of like, that's what I do. Like, I almost am at the point where I don't even enjoy music anymore because I just analyze it too much.
Really? Oh man.
Sometimes.
I definitely have to say, like, I still enjoy music, but I've found myself, I listen to a lot of podcasts, you know? And so, whereas like, and maybe it's the same thing where I'm like, I feel like I should be listening to music as a musician, but it's nice to kind of like switch your brain and you know what I mean? But yeah, no, that's true. You are kind of analyzing things. And there's some songs too that I'll hear and like, I don't really dig the song, but it's making me think in a way that I hadn't, because it's structured uniquely. And so that alone will pull me in, you know, as like, you know, if it's got a weird time signature or something, or like an interesting line, you know, or timbre of an instrument.
Or like a bass tone or something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
Totally.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that's a really great point. Okay. So I love asking these two questions. I feel like I haven't in a couple of interviews recently, but I want to hear about the moment in your career that you were like, holy shit, I've made it. Like, a big deal, right? I know it's, but I also want to hear about the moment that you just almost were like, you know what? I'm done. I'm going to work at, you know, the bank or something. Like, so, you know what I mean? Like, I'm done with music. Yeah. It's over. I want to hear about those two moments for you.
It's funny because those two moments probably happen every other day.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. 100%. Like, yeah.
Literally, because I don't know if you're the same way, but artists are so self-critical.
Yeah.
And we're so hard on ourselves, and we could have a great day, great creative day, and go to sleep just humming our new songs, and then wake up the next day and say, what was I thinking last night? That song sucks. I'm going to go back to the drawing board.
Yep. Yep.
But I would say that, you know, my work is not done ever. I mean, I want to just keep writing, you know, great hooks and great lyrics and just keep at it and never rest on my laurels and never get discouraged, because the moment that I think I've made it, I'll just wake up the next day and want to go back to the drawing board. So I would say, you know, just perseverance is what it's all about. And
you've got to leave me hanging. There's got to be one moment, and maybe it's not, you know, I've made it is a big grand, like, you know,
plan.
But what's that moment that you were just like, this is actually happening, that you just, it was something that you got really excited about that maybe you never thought would happen, or, you know, like even a moment, like, I know it's tough to kind of like say I made it because none of us feel like we've made it, but what was an exciting moment in your career that you just, you know, will never forget about?
Well, I was asked to, about a month ago, I was asked to headline City Winery Chicago.
I saw pictures on your Insta. That looked so nice.
So that show happened just a few days ago.
Oh.
And it was awesome. Everybody came out, and it was an awesome show. But a month ago when they told me, my agent called me and said, would you like to headline City Winery? I was like, I can't even, if you would have told me a year ago that I would be headlining City Winery with my band, I would have not believed you.
Wow.
So that was a huge moment for me. Just like all of the hurdles to get past, like mental barriers and just all this stuff.
Yeah.
To go from that to, you know, playing a show at one of my favorite venues. That was that was definitely a big, huge moment for me.
I loved it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looked like from the pictures on Instagram, it looked like it was an incredible show. Hopefully I'll catch the next one. Hopefully I'll be back in town.
Yeah. You're in Nashville, right?
I'm in Nashville now. Yeah. But it's an easy drive back. I go back and play. I play at Fitzgerald's in Berwyn a lot.
Cool. Yeah. I go there too.
Yeah. I like that bar. Okay. So what was the moment that you almost threw the towel in? If you want to pick just one, I know most of us have millions, but also like counter to that, what then kept you going? Why didn't you throw the towel in, you know?
Well, it's tough. Let me think. I think sometimes, you know, we look for instant gratification on social media.
Yes.
And like, let's say you post like this new video you're excited about and it's like, here it is. And then it gets like 10 views.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is even the point of trying? Like, this is pathetic.
That's literally my life on TikTok right now.
See, I don't even have TikTok. I'm
not
in that.
It's the worst.
I know it's so bad, but,
but yeah,
my manager is like, you got to get TikTok. You got to get TikTok. But
I'm sure,
honestly,
you know, you probably would do pretty well. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, but then you go back to the video a week later and you know, you get a couple comments, even just a few good comments that say, man, this is great.
Yeah.
Keep going. And I'm like, for every, you know, doubt, even a negative comment, the positive comments come out, and that's what keeps me going, you know, because just knowing that people are out there listening is just super encouraging, because that's the whole reason that we're into this is just, shoot, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Is just to get the music out there. Like, I love sharing my, you know, my gift with the world, and I want more people to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would agree. Yeah. It's a roller coaster we put ourselves on. And well, I just wanted to, I guess, you know, finish up asking, where can we send people? I know that you've got a couple of singles out already, and then your album's coming out this summer. Where should we send people to like keep updated on everything and shows you're playing and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. Just go to colinpeterick.com, colinpeterick.com. That link's everywhere. You can find me on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Spotify, all that good stuff.
Okay. TikTok.
Not TikTok yet, but we'll see.
Maybe in time.
And,
and
you know, I go back and forth to Nashville too. So if I'm in town, I'll call you. And if you're in town, call me.
Yeah, no, I would love that. Yeah, definitely let me know next time you're in town. That'd be fun. Cool.
That'd be fun to do a show together.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah, I would love that. Well, thank you for chatting, and hopefully we'll connect in Nashville or
yeah.
About to say Kansas City. I'm not there anymore. Nashville or Chicago. Anyway, well, thank you so much, and I'll hopefully talk to you soon.
I had a lot of fun talking to you, Lauren. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
I've Got a Song for That podcast is written, recorded, edited, and produced by yours truly, Lauren Anderson. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can leave a 5-star review wherever you listen. Support me on patreon.com at Lauren Anderson Music. Follow us on all the social platforms at I've Got a Song for That or Lauren Anderson Music. And share the podcast with literally everyone you know. Literally everybody. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see y'all next time.